Good afternoon, and I hope you all have had a worshipful Palm Sunday, but thank you for joining us for this latest COVID-19 update. I'm pleased today to be joined, of course, by Dr. Nate Smith, Secretary of the Department of Health, and my special guest today is Heather Larkin, the Executive Director of the Arkansas Community Foundation, who has an important announcement a little bit later, as well as Lori Landreau, President and CEO of Entergy, that will also join in that same announcement. Yesterday, we had 743 cases in Arkansas with 72 hospitalized. Today, that number has increased to 837 cases, and we have 67 hospitalized. I know Dr. Smith will elaborate on this, but of the additional cases that we had for today, 14 of them are in the Federal Correctional Institute in Forest City, which is a concern to us that Dr. Smith and his team has been working very diligently on, but that was one of the reasons for that uptick in cases. I would mention that while the hospitalizations are down, the cases are up to 837 cases, but as you will note on the projections that we have presented previously, that today, under the projections, we were supposed to be at 2,000 cases. So instead of 2,000 cases, we have 837 cases, which obviously is again an indication of beating that trend line that was established weeks ago. And so compliments to the people of Arkansas for social distancing, for taking the measures that are important to reduce the spread of this virus. And let me just make a comment about where we are right now. We are in a battle in our nation and in our state against this virus that clearly kills people and is highly contagious. And I think the deadly nature of this virus strikes people, but it's also how highly contagious it is that gets people's attention. And that's the reason for the 6 feet social distancing. That's the reason for taking the steps, not in gatherings of more than 10 people, even with that social distancing. That's the reason we've tried to limit our state to recreational travelers coming in and taking all the measures that we have done. But as the Surgeon General today pointed out on national television, this is a critical week for our nation. And so I do want to solicit the additional action of the people of Arkansas to take every precaution to make sure that we follow the guidelines and that we do all we can to reduce that spread. One of the things that I mentioned yesterday that Dr. Smith mentioned was the use of masks. And I think we were probably one of the first states to jump out ahead in terms of following the CDC guidelines and encouraging people to wear a mask whenever you're not able to socially distance. Now, that's when the mask is appropriate. And I'm here today to tell you that I will be complying with that directive. I will be utilizing a mask whenever it's appropriate and social distancing does not work. And I want to express appreciation of Dr. Smith's wife, who is Dr. Smith, who made me one of the masks. And I was going to one of our restaurants, Flying Fish, today, and I picked up a little bit of lunch, and I had my mask on as I went in there. And I would challenge everybody in Arkansas to think of this as Arkansas Fashion Week, in which everybody can design their own mask. We can have a little fun with this, and it will be interesting to see how everybody does. But you know, you won't see me all the time because we're socially distanced. But when needed, I will be wearing this mask, and the First Lady will be as well. And so with that, I invite Dr. Smith to make comments, and then we'll make the announcement that I mentioned earlier.
Thank you, Governor. I guess it is all kinds of superheroes who wear masks. And I also have My mask for today, the one from yesterday, is being washed, and have already been wearing it today. I want to give a little bit more detail on the numbers that that the governor provided. We are up to 830 cases. That is 87 more than yesterday. That's our largest single day increase, but remember, yesterday's increase was less than it had been. Our two-day average is in the low 60s, which is what we've been seeing really for the past several days. We have two new counties, Yell and Phillips counties. We're up to 64 total counties that have reported cases. Our gender distribution and racial distribution is similar to what it has been. For the age distribution, I thought it would probably be more useful to give percentages. I had a question concerned about children in particular, which ages of children are at risk. I would say we've only had 2.4% of our total cases have been in children, and that's what has been seen elsewhere. Children don't seem to get very sick from this for the most part. We still want to protect them, but they don't seem to be the ones who are having the heaviest burden of disease. For our age group 18 to 24, it's 6.6%. For the 25 to 44 year old age range, it's 29.6%. For the 45 to 64, that's 34.9%. So that's our largest single group. And then those 65 and older represent 26.4% of our cases. Of our cases, a total of 31% have had one or more underlying conditions. I've given those numbers before. I'd like to give a few percentages. 9.3% of our cases have had diabetes, 8% have had heart disease, and 5% have had chronic lung disease. We have had a total of 114 healthcare workers amongst our 830, and that's up 8 from yesterday. We have currently hospitalized is 67, as the governor said. That's actually down 5 from yesterday, which is a good trend. We've had a total of 130 who have ever been hospitalized. We have 60 who are residing in nursing homes. That's actually down 1 from yesterday. And what we've done is taken out the 3 nursing home residents who have passed away. And we'll be reporting that by those who are residing in the nursing homes. We have 27 currently on ventilators. That's up 4 from yesterday. 43 have ever been on a ventilator. And we have 16 deaths. That's up 2 from yesterday. And we have 97 recovered. That's up 17 from yesterday. Of those who have passed away, 12 of them have been in that age 65 or older, and then 4 of them have been in the 19 to 64 year range. Of our healthcare workers, 14 have been physicians, 34 nurses, 11 CNAs, and the balance are various licensed and unlicensed healthcare workers. I'd like to briefly give a little bit more detail on our nursing homes. I mentioned the total has gone down by 1 from our report yesterday, but that's because we took out 3 who had expired. We have had one additional case in a resident at Willow Bend Healthcare Rehab. That brings their total to 10, and we had a single positive resident at the Springhouse Assisted Living Facility. So we have a total of 9 nursing homes where we have cases, and we have 2 that have previously had cases but currently do not. The last thing I'd like to mention is give a brief update on the situation with the Federal Correctional Institute in Forest City. As the governor mentioned, we have 8 inmates who have tested positive there. There are at least 15 or 20 more with symptoms who we will be testing today. We've had 4 staff who have tested positive, and we have another 10 to 15 who have had significant exposures, and so we'll be testing those as well. As I mentioned yesterday, we've invited a team from the CDC to come and help us, help them in the federal facility. And they should be arriving early this week, and they will be bringing laboratory support for us as well. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to the governor.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. During this time of a national health crisis, we also have an incredible hardships being placed on Arkansans and people all across the country in terms of an economy that is struggling because of the layoffs. We anticipate by the end of this coming week, we're likely to have 100,000 that have filed unemployment claims as a result of this healthcare crisis and businesses closing down or layoffs being instituted by the employer. Now, that means that there's people that are struggling financially in paying their bills, making ends meet, and while there's an opportunity for unemployment compensation, but also an opportunity for federal assistance down the road, there's still going to be gaps. There's still going to be great needs, whether it's through food banks or whether it's through caring for children in our communities from families that are struggling. And so there's great social needs that we have here in Arkansas. And so as a result of the need and the incredible response of the people of Arkansas looking for ways to be of assistance during this time, today I'm pleased that the state of Arkansas is partnering with the Arkansas Community Foundation in supporting the COVID-19 Relief Fund. And the Community Foundation has set this up. It's a fund that they have incredible record of integrity, of proper use of benevolent funds. And for that reason, we're happy to partner with them and say this is the official designated fund that we would like to see Arkansans contribute to help other Arkansans. And as we do this, they'll be able to direct the traffic as to what needs are out there through other nonprofit groups, other relief agencies, and be able to support them. And if I can identify as a need as governor, I will be able to express that need and ask if the Community Foundation can find a way to help based upon the relief funds that Arkansans have generously provided. So I want to invite Heather to come, Executive Director of the Community Foundation, to comment on this.
Thank you, Governor Hutchinson. We're grateful for your leadership. Like you, we at the Arkansas Community Foundation recognize that this is a challenging time for Arkansans, many of whom have precious few resources to give away. But we also know we are a generous state, and people are seeking to help whenever and however they can. The Community Foundation has activated a COVID-19 relief fund to help Arkansas nonprofits serving on the front lines of this pandemic. The generosity has been amazing. We've seen Arkansas businesses, foundations, and individuals step up. Along with the Community Foundation, some names you may recognize have already given or pledged over $2 million to this fund, and I think we have some more good news today. Those include Riggs Catt, Tyson Family Foundation, the Wingate Charitable Foundation, the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, the Walmart Foundation, and the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. We're so grateful to these organizations and to so many individuals who have stepped up and are already making gifts. And we hope that others who are in a position to give will do so, either through this fund or by reaching out to their favorite nonprofit who's doing important work at this time. All donations made to this fund will be granted to Arkansas nonprofits working to serve the state's most vulnerable populations and those disproportionately affected by the coronavirus and its economic fallout. Donations can be made at arcf.org/COVID-19. Grants from this fund will help nonprofits maintain their operations and respond to the increased demand from their clients. The Community Foundation has already issued 175 grants to nonprofits across the state, and a list of those nonprofits can be found on our website, which we will continuously update as we move money out the door. The Community Foundation works in all 75 counties in Arkansas, And to do that with the greatest impact, we have 28 local offices across the state. They are our boots on the ground, helping us work with local nonprofits in every corner of our great state. You can find more information about that network on our website. So let me say that this is why the Community Foundation exists, to help Arkansans connect to the nonprofits that are doing the work that is needed in our communities. Arkansans always find a way to help each other, and as you know, now more than ever, help is needed. So we encourage people to please go to arcf.org/COVID-19 to donate or to reach out to their favorite nonprofit and give. I want to say thank you to all those who've already given for trusting us with their charitable dollars. And Governor Hutchinson, thank you so much for supporting the nonprofit sector and helping them respond during this crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. And now Lori Landrews, CEO and President of Entergy, will come and talk a little bit about how the utility company Entergy is handling this, but also comment on the foundation.
Thank you, Governor. Entergy Arkansas is proud to stand with you in these trying times. During our 107 years of serving the people of Arkansas, we have been no stranger to adversity. We have been on the front lines of the state's recovery to many natural disasters. Challenges are part of our business. We hope for the best, but we plan for the worst. With this pandemic, we know our healthcare workers, our first responders, our government, our grocery stores, and all of our customers depend on us now more than ever. We take that trust very seriously. Our linemen and our technicians behind the scenes are working every hour of every day to keep the power flowing and keep the grid safe and reliable. And we know our peer utilities are doing the same. But we also know that Arkansans are struggling. For many, this pandemic has left them without a job or a business, resulting in significant financial hardship. To help ease that burden, we have temporarily suspended disconnects for non-payment. And we want our customers to know that we will continue to work with them in any way we can to help them recover. That is also why we are here today. We're honored to play a supporting role in the Arkansas COVID-19 Relief Fund. Governor, you've been a role model of responsible leadership throughout this event. And the Entergy Charitable Foundation is happy to entrust this fund with $100,000 to address the critical needs of Arkansans during this difficult time. And we encourage others who are able to pledge what they can to support our community. Thank you for all you do for our citizens. Thank you, Dr. Smith. Thank you, Heather, for allowing us the opportunity to partner with you at this critical time.
Thank you, Lori. And let me assure you that Arkansans are applauding with that generosity, but also understanding of the utilities and payments and what the steps that you've taken in that regard. With that, I'd be happy to turn it open to questions.
Governor,
yes.
I want to make sure I didn't miss here. A few minutes ago, I think you said there were 837 cases in the state of Arkansas, but I thought I heard Dr. Smith say 830. I wanted to make sure what the total is.
It's 830.
He's always right.
U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Fauci seemed pointedly grim this morning in their assessments of the week or 10 days to come. We heard phrases like 9/11, Pearl Harbor. Is that likely to apply here? Or is Arkansas about to see the worst, judging by your models, your statistics, in the next 7 to 10 days?
Dr. Smith and I talked about that before we came in here today, and you know, we started early on this effort. We took steps early, and our trend line is just different than what you're seeing nationally in some of the hot spots. Now, what we always fear is that you're going along on the trend line at a fairly flat level or slow increase, and then it all of a sudden exponentially increases. We hope we don't get to that point. Now, we're making sure that we have the resources needed if it does, but we're hoping that because of the work of Arkansans and masks and social distancing, that we're going to keep the trend line that we have now. And if that's the case, then we're not going to see the kind of explosive growth and deaths that you see in other states. But I wanted to ask Dr. Smith if you would further comment on that.
Thank you, Governor. I think there are many parts of the country where this is a critical week. It's critical for us to continue to do the things that we know we need to do to prevent the spread of COVID-19. However, if you look at where we are, for example, with hospitalizations, even the most conservative of the estimates that we have, the University of Washington model has us at a little over 2,000 hospitalized patients on April 25th. For us to go from where we are to there, we would have to double 5 times in the next 20 days. And that's not at all what we've been seeing in the past week or two. So I think we're in a different place than many other parts of the country. It's always dangerous to make predictions about the future, especially with a virus that's new. But where we are right now, it would be very, very difficult for us to get those high numbers as were projected. So I think we're in a better place than I hoped for us to be 2 weeks ago.
Let me just add, too, that all Arkansans are watching what happens in New York and in New Orleans, and we're one country. And so it's going to be a tough week for our nation, as the Surgeon General and the President has said, and that includes Arkansas, even though we are not in the same pathway and line that they are in. And so it's going to be tough. We're going to see it every night on our evening news, and we're praying for our nation. We want to do our part here in Arkansas, and I think we are right now. Yes, ma'am.
My question is about the order that you signed yesterday. So we got a call from somebody who works at Quality Inn in Forest City, and they said that they have a large group in right now from South Carolina. So my question is, how is this going to be enforced? How will managers be able to check that, the people that check in are the right people that need to be there?
Well, if you've got a group at the Quality Inn from South Carolina, the first question the hotelier should ask is, if they're there for recreational travel, then that's not what should be happening. That's what the executive order is designed to go after. Now, if they're here for business purposes, if they're here to help utility companies, if they're here to help in the COVID-19 crisis, or there's other exceptions there, then we welcome there, and that's what the lodging is for. And then also, you've got to recognize that we just entered that order yesterday. It very well could be that they were en route, and obviously you've got to honor the reservation that was there. But that's the guidance that we've given, the directive that we've given, and that's exactly what we don't need, is we don't need to have recreational travelers from South Carolina coming here during this time of national crisis. That's what we're trying to avoid. Yes, ma'am.
I have a prison question. Since we can see how fast it's going through, I guess, this federal prison in Forest City, are you considering any actions to let people in, for example, who are in jail simply because they can't make bail, or who are old in the prison and susceptible to this virus? Are you thinking of any conditional commutations or provisional release or something of that kind?
Some of the counties, I understand, have taken measures to relieve the presence in the jail of a vulnerable population, or if there's a nonviolent offender. So I think some of the counties have taken measures because those cases have not been adjudicated. They're still pending. But in terms of the state itself, these have been adjudicated. They've been sentenced to prison, and there's not any plan to do any release because of the COVID-19 crisis. We have certainly taken the steps to protect the population and measures that we're watching every day. And if it changes and there is an outbreak, then we'll have to make judgments moment by moment. But there's not any way you can release particularly the violent offenders that are there and many others. And so they're looking at ways that you can have areas that will protect them, that will isolate them, versus being in the general population. So there are plans and contingencies depending upon what happens. I'll emphasize that the outbreak that we've had is in the Federal Correctional Institute, as you know the distinction, versus our state prison. And we've been fortunate right now to not to have that kind of outbreak there. Frank.
Governor, two questions. First of all, during the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic, many Arkansas cities ordered churches to close during the pandemic. News reports suggest that they complied, although some of them didn't like it. In 2020, why is the state making it optional for churches?
Well, because churches, by and large, do the right thing. They want to protect their parishioners, and so every church that I'm aware of has moved to online services. I went to an online service today, and that's how most Arkansans worship today, is through an online service. There are a few that have a very small attendance and they socially distance. We don't recommend that, but if it's within the guidelines, then that's understandable. As you know, Frank, there was an instance in which we had trouble having a church was what I looked at as really putting the parishioners at risk. And so our Department of Health called them and they took the right steps and are not meeting with the large congregation that we had anticipated.
Pastor, thousands of churches have listened to you. They're sacrificing, they're closing their doors in order to help slow the spread of this pandemic. For churches that may read about this other option, opening your doors, but putting in precautions, social distancing, etc., Easter's approaching, what message would you have for those thousands of churches?
Well, just remember what's at risk. We've had one instance of one of the largest outbreaks in Arkansas was through a church-related service and a gathering of people. So gathering of people is what you've got to be careful of. And so they have those guidelines. They have that caution. Dr. Smith, do you want to add to this?
I would echo the governor's comments. It's really the gathering of people, not so much the activity that we're concerned about.
Yes. Got a question for Dr. Smith. Dr. Smith, you said a few minutes ago that today there's 27 patients who are on ventilators.
Yes.
We've been hearing about the difficulties that some states have had getting ventilators. Some are worried they don't have enough. How many ventilators does the state of Arkansas have available?
We track that on a daily basis. What I have with me in terms of those numbers is a couple of days old, 2 days old, but ventilator inventory, that's not that we have them in a storehouse somewhere, but these are all the ventilators owned in the states out at hospitals, 785. And of those, 551 were available two days ago. So that meant that 234 were in use. So we actually have quite a reserve, not that they're stored someplace in a warehouse, but they're out there in the hospitals where they need to be. So we can absorb some increase. If we have more than that, though, then we will need to obtain additional ventilators and take other actions to help care for those patients.
Yes, ma'am.
For this correctional facility that had this outbreak, what steps are already being taken to protect the rest of the inmates and the staff?
Well, what we've advised for the Federal Correctional Institute is to segregate those who are known positive, those who have symptoms. As you can imagine, that's a little bit challenging in that setting. That's why we've asked our partners at the CDC to come and assist. We don't always have as easy access to a federal facility as we would if it were a state facility, but we've been providing guidance, and so far the folks there at the facility have been following that guidance. We need to test a whole lot more than we have tested, and we'll need to take additional actions to prevent the spread.
For the supply of test kits, is that situation getting better?
It's okay right now, but there are, as you know, across the country, challenges in terms of getting reagents. And so I'm a little reluctant to say we're doing well because the situation could change next week. We're hoping to do better, though. We're hoping that we can obtain more reagents and to continue to increase our testing capacity both at the Arkansas Department of Health Public Health Lab and the UAMS laboratory. Fortunately, we are seeing a good number of test results coming from the commercial labs. Yesterday, we had a total of 992 results. Of those, 111 were done in the Arkansas Department of Health Public Health Lab, 56 at UAMS, and we had 825 reported to us from commercial labs.
Is there one question from the remote locations?
Governor, this is David with Little River Post, and I was wondering what kind of recommendations you have for people who are in counties where there are no positive cases.
Well, the recommendation would be that if you're symptomatic, you need to go get a test, and those locations are available. So we actually have a mobile unit that could move into those counties that have not had a positive test yet. Dr. Smith, did you have anything else to add there?
Certainly. Although we do have 11 counties who have not yet reported cases, we're assuming that COVID-19 could be anywhere. So even if you're in a county with no reported cases, you should still consider public spaces as an area of potential COVID-19 transmission. Practice social distancing where social distancing is challenged. We're following the CDC guidelines for wearing a cloth mask and doing all the other things we know to do, hand washing and staying certainly home quarantine if there's been an exposure, and home isolation if there's been a positive test case.
Yes.
The number of tests we performed, how many individuals have been tested? I know that some people are tested more than once. Do we have a number of individuals?
We have not separated that out per se if someone were tested like a week later, but in cases where someone has had a test sent off to a commercial lab and it's been days and they've not gotten a result, there are some situations in which we've gone ahead and run those in the public health lab where we needed that information right away, and then we deduplicate that. So those are not,
how many individuals have
almost all of these are single individuals. Of the 11,488 we've done so far, if there's one sent to the commercial lab and one done in our lab within a few days of each other, we've deduplicated that, and so we've not, those are not.
Multiple testing in nursing homes too, right?
At some point, yes. For example, one individual, got to the point where, you know, they had no symptoms and was retested 2 weeks later and they tested negative. But almost all of these cases are single individuals.
Doctor, have any of those who've been in Arkansas who've been clinically certified to have recovered from COVID-19, have they been asked to participate in any way, for example, submitting blood, a search for antibodies, anything along those lines?
Yes, we're in the process that we've actually reached out and asked them. We're in the process of setting that up to make that happen. We're still probably at least a week or two away for getting all the components ready for a place for people to be tested to make sure that they're clear of the virus, a place where they can actually have the plasma collected, and then a place to process that so it's available to physicians who are caring for sick patients, very sick patients with COVID-19. But all the pieces are coming together. So we hope to have that within 2 or 3 weeks at the longest, I would hope.
We'll take this question and we'll go remotely. Yes.
What is the criteria for being tested? And also, if I may, have Dr. Smith, have you and the governor been tested?
I've not been tested because I don't meet any of the criteria for it. Priorities I've stated before, healthcare workers, hospitalized patients, residents of nursing homes, and then those who are 65 years of age and older or have underlying medical conditions who have symptoms. There are some settings where there's high risk of transmission where we will go ahead and test people without symptoms because it's important to know if they're infected even though they're not showing symptoms. The problem with testing people who are not symptomatic is that if the test is positive, well, you know they're infected, but if the test is negative, it may just be too early in the course of an infection. So you can't release someone from a quarantine based on that test result, because they could go out there and they were just early in their infection and then they become symptomatic and then they've exposed a bunch of people. So I'm getting requests, well, can you help us out with this situation? This person's in quarantine, we want to get them out, they don't have symptoms, can you go ahead and test them? Well, you know, I can't get them out of quarantine on the basis of a negative test. If they test positive, then that may be useful information, but we got to watch them and make sure they don't develop symptoms, make sure they don't go on to develop obvious infection. So anyhow, I would not be a candidate, and as far as I know, the governor's not a candidate for testing because neither of us are symptomatic, neither of us have an exposure or a travel history that would put us at risk.
Is that good enough? I have not been tested. Let's go remotely. Is there a question? And we'll take a couple, two more in here. Is there a remote question?
Yes, I have a remote question. Governor, Dr. Smith, this is Dawn Scott with CBS here in Little Rock, PhD 11. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You have placed a great deal of emphasis on healthcare workers. They're a part of the numbers every day with 114 sick today. They're priority testing for them. But we're hearing a number of healthcare workers with concern about elective surgeries. I know you put a directive in place on Friday. However, what we've been hearing from multiple people is it's business as usual tomorrow at a number of facilities here in Central Arkansas, Arkansas Surgical Hospital being one, and a Baptist facility where at least two COVID patients died so far. How are you going to enforce this? Some of these cases that the workers are telling us have been on the books for months. Clearly, that's not urgent.
It is important that people who need surgical procedures, either to save life or limb, or where they're very time sensitive, it's important that they go ahead and receive those surgical procedures. If we do receive notice that people are going ahead and scheduling cases that are clearly not time sensitive and potentially either putting that patient at risk because a COVID-19 patient may also come in, or consuming PPE and other resources that would be needed for COVID-19 patients, then we would go ahead and take action. The Arkansas Department of Health, as you know, licenses all the hospitals in the state. Medical Board is responsible for the ambulatory surgical centers. So if we're aware of those infractions or failure to comply with that directive, of course, we'll take action.
Take two more questions from the table, and that'll be it. Franklin. Yes.
Governor, there's been talk about a bidding war for supplies between the states. I'm wondering if you're seeing that, encountering that, and also this has been described as 911 or Pearl Harbor. How much sense does it make for states to have to get their own weapons if they're fighting a modern 9/11 or Pearl Harbor?
Well, in terms of the competition among the states, there's been one instance in which actually it was New York that paid a premium, and they got the product when we had an order confirmed. So there is that competition. The other level of competition is simply that because all the states are trying to acquire, as well as the other countries and the Department of Defense, there's just a limited supply to get. And so even when you're dealing with somebody that's scrupulous, or that has good ethical business requirements, we still could be weeks away that you have to order a product or get the production time on the factory floor. So it's just a challenge for the states. And it's even a greater challenge in terms of the ventilators. The ventilators have fewer areas of production. The availability is less. And so that's one area where I actually talked to the Vice President about whether you can invoke the Defense Production Act, not just to make General Motors to make the product, the ventilators, but also to help direct the supply. If we knew that we were getting a set amount of ventilators, 1 month from now, then that will guide our decisions on the marketplace. And the Vice President, to his credit, he says, if you need ventilators, they'll be there for you. And so they're directing the supply of ventilators, but obviously it's going to the New York, and I'm not, we're okay now. So I don't dispute that at all. If they've got extra ventilators, it needs to go to New York, and it needs to go to New Orleans. It's going to be running short. But we have to measure the time frame coming up. And one of the thoughts is having a coalition of some governors so we can join together, maybe five states, to enhance our strength in the market and to buy ventilators particularly. But it is competitive, and there's a supply chain challenge for us, but we're adjusting to it. We've got some great teamwork, and we were one of the first states to have that centralized purchasing power. We put the $75 million out there early so that we could get in line, and so I feel much more comfortable about our supply chain, except the ventilators, which is going to be challenging. Last question.
So I know that the directive is for people to wear a mask if they're not in the position to social distance. So I was wondering if you could talk about maybe some household items people can make these masks out of at home.
I will, and then I'll let the doctor have the last word on that. But first of all, the prison industries is producing masks that they utilize in their facilities for inmates and for guards, which is very creative. And they're using old uniforms and cloth that they have. I saw the Surgeon General demonstrate a mask today that was made out of a t-shirt that he had. It was a pretty good looking t-shirt, I thought, high quality, but there's a lot of products like that you can make it. Dr. Smith, since you've...
I think actually probably my wife would be the expert on that. Those can be made out of a variety of materials. I've even seen a YouTube video making one out of a bandana and rubber bands without even doing any cutting or sewing. So there's a lot of options out there for people. And the purpose of these is to capture droplets coming out of our mouths so that those who are asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic don't inadvertently expose other people.
So with that, I want to thank the Community Foundation again, and for Entergy for the contribution, and thank you for your attention today. Thank you.